Good morning show with Robin Mitchell and John Hendricks, and it's good to see Kim Murasaki again. Yeah, how are you?
I'm great. I'm always happy to come and see you too.
Oh, good.
It's been a while.
It has been. It's probably been over a year.
Yeah, you've changed gigs a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, for almost 2 years now, I've been working for the Northwest Montana Community Land Trust, mm-hmm. and we do affordable housing. And right now, we just have houses in Kalispell, but we're hoping to have a few more affordable houses around the valley.
Explain to us how you're doing this, because it seems to be absolutely impossible to maintain any number of affordable homes.
Yeah. So the Community Land Trust model is brilliant. I had nothing to do with starting it. I just admire it. The Community Land Trust model is where you go in, a nonprofit buys, let's say, a house with land underneath it, and they divide the land from the house. And so the land trust holds the land forever, and they sell just the house. And so they're able to sell the house at a lower cost than what it would normally be. And here in Kalispell, the city of Kalispell and Community Action Partnership and some boards got together and did that right after the last recession. They bought a bunch of houses off the foreclosure market, fixed them up, separated the land from the house, and sold the houses at a lower cost. And continue to lease the land for $25 a month to the homeowners.
Okay, so it was a financial arrangement, not a physical arrangement, where they separate the land from the house,
right,
correct?
Right, right, yeah. Financial. Okay. So the titles are separated for the land.
Okay.
And then as part of the agreement for being able to get into a house at a lower cost, the people who own the home agree that when they sell it, when they want to sell it, they can sell it back to the land trust, but they're going to sell it for 100% of what they paid for it, plus just 25% of the increase in the appraised value since they owned it.
Okay.
So that always keeps the cost below market. And then the land trust turns around, sells that house again to another family who's eligible. And so it always stays below market. So when you see crazy times like we're seeing now, people who are just working here in the valley can actually afford to own a house.
Well, that's kind of getting to be the situation. We're running out of land here, particularly in the city itself.
That's
and
true.
That land is getting to be so expensive that it's inflating the price of the home itself, even if the home is an older home.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. So it's a great system for that.
Yeah.
And it's a very fair system, because the land trust is making some equity available to the person, so they're walking away with a little bit extra cash if markets continue to go up.
Absolutely. Gives people who maybe wouldn't be able to get into a house otherwise, gives them a chance to either, you know, like you said, accumulate some equity or...
and they have a roof over their head.
Exactly. They don't have to worry about the landlord deciding to sell their rental out from underneath them.
Yeah.
And... go ahead.
I'm just thinking, can you give us an example of what that would mean in terms of dollars and cents for somebody buying a home like that?
Yeah, so we have 52 properties, and my experience so far is about 4 or 5 houses per year turnover.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're buying those houses back at somewhere between $150,000 and $200,000. Those people probably got into those houses for something $20,000 to $30,000 less than what we bought it back from them. So they're walking away with all of the, whatever they paid down to the bank while they lived in the house, plus that extra $20,000 or $30,000.
Okay, so it does make quite a difference then in what you have to pay for the home.
Yes, absolutely. So the houses that we already have that we were fortunate to buy after the last recession, those houses, so far I've been able to sell them all for under $200,000. We're hoping to work with some private developers who are local and understand what's going on and that we need workforce housing. And they've been talking to me about donating land within a larger development where then we could build houses and sell them. So the land trust wouldn't have to pay for the land.
Okay. And I'm just thinking about the homes themselves. Some of these are, I would imagine, older homes that may be in not in the best of repair at this point. Are you in a position to fix them up a bit before you sell them?
So when they bought the homes off the foreclosure market back in 2010, 11, 12, they did a great job of rehabbing them at that time. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so... you know, they still need work. I mean, if you're, that's the problem with being a homeowner, right? You still need to fix the roof sometimes or put in new carpet.
That's a responsibility of home ownership.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, and every land trust is different, but in our case, the homeowner agrees to pay the property taxes on both the land and the home, which makes sense because they're probably sending their kids to school and,
sure,
of course, driving on the roads and all that stuff. So.
Yeah. So by doing that, it gives the land trust a lot more money to use to buy additional properties.
Right, right. And so I always like to talk, when we have these conversations, talk about the difference between affordable and attainable and workforce housing.
Yeah,
because,
let's do that.
Okay. So affordable, if you're thinking about using federal or state dollars to kind of pay that gap between what a house costs and what a family can afford to pay for it. That's all depends on their household size and their household income. And it's set by what the area median income is. So in Flathead Valley, we've got an area median income and they consider low to moderate incomes 80% of the area median income. And that is all depending on how big your family is. We're lucky because we can actually go up to 120% of area median income and sell houses to people who have a little bit more household income. And I love that because we're really addressing that middle, that moderate to high, upper moderate income in our valley that is really getting squeezed right now. That sort of exhausted middle that's totally squeezed at the moment. So that's affordable, 80% of area median income. Workforce housing is just simply that we need more workforce than we currently have to provide all of the services that the people who live in this valley require and desire. And, that's for people who work at the police department or teachers or people who work at City Hall or people who work at the clerk of court's office, people who just make things run, people who work at the hospital. So that is just, we simply do not have enough housing for the people who want to come here and take open jobs. There's no place for them to live. And you can see that in every industry and every community. We're not talking about just waitresses and service workers. We're talking about every single type of job there is.
Well, we understand our new fire chief is still living in his RV.
Yes, and every city is down on the sheriff. They're down on police. Schools can't find teachers. I talked to the postmaster the other day. Post office has 19 open positions. Well, how do you run a post office with 19 open positions?
Oh my gosh! Here?
Here.
No wonder they're closing the office over there at noon.
Right?
At the Kalispell.
Yeah.
Downtown.
So when developers come and they're offering to do rental apartments and build townhouses and single family houses all in one location, that's really hitting all those workforce needs because, a young teacher just out of school isn't going to be able to come here and buy a house right off the bat. They need to be able to rent something for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I think a starting salary for a teacher here is somewhere in the vicinity of $28,000.
Yeah. You can buy a house with that. You got to be able to rent until you get established.
Well, at this point, it's hard to even find a place to rent
right
that you can afford with that.
Well, and I know that everybody's upset because we're building more stuff, but the more supply, prices will start to come down a little bit.
I hear people saying things like, we got to stop the growth. We can't have this growth. And I'm thinking, what's your plan? We're going to build a wall around the Flathead?
Right. It still is America.
Post the National Guard out there and shoot anybody that comes over the wall? Is that what we're going to do?
I know, right?
We can't.
It's
it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yep. You can't do that.
No.
And you wouldn't want to anyway, because visitors coming here is a huge part of our income.
Right, right. And, you know, if we want young people to come here and take jobs and keep building up the community, we have to make it possible.
Mm-hmm. So how is the funding happening for doing this? Because what you're talking about is a big chunk of change.
Yes. So good question. So back after the last recession, there were a lot of funds that came from something called a neighborhood stabilization program, which was basically the federal government saying, you know, we got all these houses that were foreclosed upon. We need to get them back out and get people living in them. But the great thing is, when you're selling the house, once you've made that first investment in the land and you sell the house, you don't actually need any more money. You just keep selling the house again and again for what you paid for it. So you're revolving. But, you know, there are some administration costs and some fees. Of course, we got to go to the title company and real estate agents and all that. So we're lucky that we have a lot of private grants from, you know, Wells Fargo and Glacier Bank and Flathead Electric Co-op and some national ones as well. And right now I'm working with the state. I'm hoping to get a larger grant to buy some new houses up in Columbia Falls, state of Montana. And, you know, the governor's task force is talking about what they can do for affordable housing. So I'm hoping there'll be more funds like that. And then we're really fortunate this year. We're participating in the Whitefish Community Foundation's Great Fish Community Challenge.
Yes.
And all of the funds that we're able to raise through that will also go towards buying new houses and then just managing the program.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the concept here is so unique, and yet it seems so simple.
Yeah,
why didn't we think about this before?
It's not, you know, and not, it's not for everybody. If you're investing in your house because you want to, you know, you want to make a killing when the market goes up, this program wouldn't be for you. But it's a tool in the toolbox.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you can, you can realize some of your equity, which will allow you then to perhaps make that next investment.
Absolutely, and that's what we see a lot. We see people moving on to their next house.
And of course, that makes room for the next person who needs one.
Yeah, yeah. And it's amazing to see the huge generosity in this community. We have the opportunity to have two older homes donated to us if we would relocate them to a different location. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we'd have to put a foundation under it and hook it up to all the utilities and all of that. But we've got a company who's willing to put a new roof on one of those houses for us for free. We've got a Lumiglass has offered to give us windows at cost. So huge amounts of community support because people understand that problem. I just can't find a lot right now to put either of these houses on that, I mean, I can pay for the lot, but I actually need to be able to find one.
Yeah, find one first.
So so I keep putting the word out. I keep hoping somebody's going to decide that they want to sell me a lot for a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a couple of them even here in town that are still vacant lots.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised. There's one over on 7th Avenue West. It's right on the corner there. It's a big lot.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's a 1,700 square foot house, so and it's all on one level, so I have to have a relatively big lot.
You might want to check that one out.
Okay.
It's on 5th Street East and I'm sorry, 5th Street West and 7th Avenue West.
Okay.
All right.
Whoever owns that property might have to give you a finder's fee.
Yeah. I just when you talk about how you can move a home, you know, that's something that was done pretty routinely here about 50 years ago. In fact, the home that my dad built over on 7th Avenue East, he moved in a smaller home from the Foy's Lake area.
Yes.
They moved it in. He put the foundation and everything all down. They just dropped it right on there and, you know, hooked everything up. And then Dad started adding on to it and to the house that it frankly is today still.
Yeah.
And this was 1945.
Yeah. When I was a kid, my aunt and uncle lived in this great big old farmhouse that they had moved out to Fairmont again. My husband's first job when we moved back from Japan was moving houses.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it is something that's very doable in this day and age.
Absolutely.
All right. Kim, what a great program. Thank you for coming in and enlightening us. This is really neat, and this may be one of the answers we need to make it so that people can afford to live here again.
Yeah, I think we need all those tools in the toolbox. We need everything, and
all right.
I'm glad to be part of it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.